On a recent gray day in Portland, Maine, a small group of people gather to open a box they've waited years to see.
So there we are, and I hopefully soon will be holding him in stone like we're holding him in memory now.
It's a late chapter in a saga that began more than two centuries ago. A story of justice twice denied, or at least delayed, for an African-American Mainer. Fred Bever explains.
William Brown was likely born a slave in Maryland, but he later settled in Maine, then a part of Massachusetts. In 1799, when Brown was barely an adolescent, he enlisted in the U.S. Navy, and he played a role in its first major victory. It started with a hot trade dispute with France that became known as the Quasi-War.
The Quasi-War broke into an outright shooting war at sea in the early days of February 1799, when the USS Constellation met the French frigate El Insurgente off of St. Kitts and Nevins Islands.
Herb Adams, a Portland native steeped in Maine and U.S. history, says William Brown served in that battle as what was then called a powder monkey, or as Adams says,
a powder boy. That is, he, being small, would race barefoot from below decks up to deck to the men fighting the guns during battle with leather buckets full of black gunpowder, and had to keep this routine up, down, as long as the battle lasted.
And it lasted, Adams says, about an hour and a quarter.
Before the French frigate pulled down its flag and lost its masts in disarray and surrendered to the Americans. It made Captain Thomas Truxton of the Constellation an instant and enormous American hero.
But it forever scarred William Brown, as a shipmate would later attest.
In the engagement, said Brown was wounded in consequence of the discharge of a musket in the top of the enemy's vessel, entering the foot near the ankle and breaking the bones of the foot.
That testimony was submitted to Congress some four decades after the battle, in an effort to help the now infirm Brown win recognition of his service and a military pension. The archives show that a number of Mainers would join Brown's petitions. Other shipmates, doctors and surgeons who swore to Brown's long-term disability, pension agents, and big-shot Portland lawyers, including then-Senator Hannibal Hamlin, later Abraham Lincoln's vice president, who wrote of his good character and truthfulness.
It was his service that was in question and not his color. But frustrating as it was for him, this man lived and limped all his life, working as a sea cook, on the ocean and on land. He was a cartman, that is, he'd haul things from A to B, never able really to walk well, and regaling children in Portland about his stories of life at sea because the Congress wouldn't listen to him.
Brown hit some major roadblocks. He was told that because the Quasi-War was never officially declared, no pensions would be offered for service before 1800, or his name didn't appear in military records, or papers were lost, letters unreturned, Congress adjourned before acting. More than a decade passed between Brown's first attempt to get a pension and the day it was won.
And eventually, in 1854, in August, he was granted a pension of $96 a year by the United States Congress. Unfortunately, he had died in May 1854. His pension arrived after he had died.
And Brown's story might have ended here, where he was buried, in Portland's Old Eastern Cemetery. But for the past several years, Herb Adams and a handful of like-minded Portlanders have made it their business to identify African-American citizens who were interred anonymously in this quiet 5-acre swath of grass and gravestones overlooking the sea. They focused on those who served in America's early wars.
They could not, if they were a soldier, be buried beside a white man they had fought beside. Such were the days. And therefore, this area tends to be fairly open because, of course, they, as a general rule, could not have afforded stones.
4 years ago, a Maine historian named Larry Glatz chanced upon the National Archives' trove of quasi-war documents, misfiled under the War of 1812. He notified Adams of William Brown's story, and the two sleuthed their way to an application to the federal and state governments for a veteran's headstone. As with Brown's original pension request, this one, too, was a stop-and-go affair.
government then, government now. You know, there's paperwork, there's bureaucracy.
Larry Glatz was dogged, though, once again offering proofs of Brown's service to the authorities, making repeat requests, following up, making calls, answering questions. And finally, late last month, they got the news. The Veterans Administration had dropped off a new headstone for William Brown at a city garage. It's made of white Vermont marble, about waist high and narrow, like the headstones at Arlington National Cemetery.
The stone is inscribed very simply.
That's Larry Glatz, who was on hand as the inscribed granite piece was unwrapped at the garage.
William Brown, USS Constellation, 1786-1854.
It's nice to see USS Constellation, that's great.
Although, it is.
It would be nice to have a date, you know.
Well, we can see if
quasi,
that can be a
quasi-war with France, you know.
Quasi-war.
Yeah.
It's a quasi-stone until
quasi-stone.
Then.
Sometime this spring, the headstone will be set over the section of the Old City Cemetery where, for more than 150 years, William Brown's grave has gone unmarked.
He fought for a country that didn't recognize him appropriately in the short life that he had, and he is still one of us, and we owe him this.
The sons of France our seas invade, destroy our commerce and our trade. This time the reckoning should be paid to brave Yankee boys on board the Constellation.
For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Fred Bever.
We sailed to the West Indies in order to annoy the invaders of our commerce, to burn, sink, and destroy. Our Constellation shone so bright, those Frenchmen could not bear the sight, and away they scampered in a fright from brave Yankee boys. 'Twas on the 9th of February at Montserrat we lay, and there we spied the La Sergent just at the break of day. We raised the orange and the blue to see if they our signal knew. The Constellation and its crew of brave Yankee boys. Then all hands were called to quarters while we pursued the chase. With well-primed guns our tompions out and well-spliced the main brace. Then soon to France we did draw nigh, compelled to fight they were or fly. These words were passed: conquer or die, my brave Yankee boys. Then loud our cannons thundered with peals' tremendous roar, and death upon our bullets' wings that drenched their decks in gore. The blood did from their scuppers run. Their chief exclaimed, "We are undone." Their flag they struck. The battle was won by brave Yankee boys. And to St. Kitts we steered and brought her safe in port. The grand salute was fired and answered from the fort. Now sitting round the flowing bowl with hearty glee each jovial soul, drink as you fought without control, my brave Yankee boys. Now here's a health to Truxton, who did not fear the sight, and all those Yankee sailors who for their country fight. John Adams in full bumpers toast, George Washington, Columbia's boast. And now to the girls that we love most, my brave Yankee boys.